It's New Year's Eve 1999. You're listening to the BB Sky C, where it's time to look back at the 90s. This week, 1997, a year that will always be remembered for one terrible disaster. 11.02 a.m. on an ordinary working day at Canary Wharf. Suddenly, all 125 floors of office space come crashing to the ground. One person is slightly injured. But 1997 began with a surprise, March. A month that saw this shocking panorama documentary.
Forced to live in small boxes, ignored by the authorities for years, driven underground, we ask, is society discriminating against dead people? I spoke to Dave Reynolds, who campaigns on behalf of the dead.
Yeah, like, they're not allowed into restaurants, they're not allowed to drive, they're disqualified from the Olympics. It's outrageous.
Dave is chairman of Start Treating Interred Friends Fairly, or STIFF. A new pressure group for the dead.
Actually, we prefer to use the phrase livingly challenged.
Yeah. Dave, I can't help noticing that you yourself aren't dead.
Excuse me, at least I'm doing something. You know, I've set up the country's first drop-in centre for dead people with workshops, skills exchange and a notice board.
How many dead people are using this centre?
Well, it's early days, obviously, but it's a resource.
Dave, none of the dead people we've spoken to expressed any concern about discrimination whatsoever.
Actually, that's not true.
Dave, you're not fooling anyone. Will you take that white sheet off your head now?
1997 saw amazing progress in the world of medicine. The first successful heart, lung and liver transplant. The first heart, lung, liver and knee transplant. And in April, the first entire person transplant, when Mr. David Benson was transplanted with Carlos Jesu Fernandez from Barcelona.
How is he, Doctor?
Well, Mrs. Benson, your husband will live,
yeah,
but you may notice some changes in him.
Oh, oh love, are you okay?
No, it's no good. I hate me. I hate me.
Oh, no, we thought this might happen. He's rejected himself.
Thankfully, Mr. Benson recovered and now enjoys a normal life with his wife and a large black bull which chases him around the living room. By 1997, record companies had released every possible compilation album, so they re-released the best of them on one compilation album. Eventually, they had to look elsewhere for ideas.
Panadol Records presents 20 irritating noises of today, featuring the unmistakable off-license door. The unforgettable late-night classic. Hour after hour of uneasy listening, including the rather embarrassing neighbour's doorbell. Also features the ever unpopular cell phone on a train. Plus, the most irritating noise of all, the person talking on it.
Yeah, hi, I'm on a train. I said I'm on a train! Oh, damn, I've been cut off.
And remember, 20 irritating noises is not available in the shops. It's available absolutely bloody everywhere.
1997.
They have dubbed him the forgotten hostage. Now at last he's back on British soil. Kevin Booth, why do you think the Foreign Office did nothing to secure your release throughout your 2,365-day ordeal?
2,366 days, I think you'll find. What I would suggest is that in your calculations, you've overlooked the fact that one of the years was, in fact, a leap year as such.
Yes.
But to return to your initial, though mathematically inaccurate question, I have no idea why the Foreign Office did so little to get me back, particularly as I was working for them immediately prior to my inopportune capture.
What was your job?
Well, at first I was employed in the position of caretaker, but after only 3 weeks I was suddenly promoted to head of negotiations with Hezbollah.
Now, the conditions in your cell...
Well, they were absolutely shocking. The grouting on those tiles was flat-dash, to say the least. As I pointed out time and time again.
Yes. Now, you spent 6 years chained to a radiator. What was that like?
Well, it was a Dimplex multi-flow, but it had an airlock and was never quite as hot at the top as it was at the bottom.
Yes. One day you woke up to find that the radiator had escaped.
Yes, that was a low point for me.
How did your captors treat you?
Absolutely despicably. Every day they would bundle me into a van, drive me to the airport and shout, "Go in the name of Allah, go." But they couldn't break my spirit. Oh, no. I secretly memorised the route and found my way back.
Yes, now, on your return, you were taken to RAF Nineham, where you saw 5 psychiatrists.
No. I saw 1 psychiatrist, then he had to see 4.
Mr. Kevin Booth, who shortly after that interview was driven to a secret destination and left there. Meanwhile, in an effort to improve the image of international terrorism, the Association of Professional Urban Guerrillas organized the first ever Terrorism World Cup.
Number 17,
Basque separatists,
will meet number 6,
the Baader-Meinhof gang.
Oh, an interesting draw there. The Germans not the force they used to be. Now, of course, without Baader, or indeed Meinhof.
Number 22,
Hezbollah,
will play number 9,
the Animal Liberation Front.
Oh, that's going to be a tricky fixture for the plucky animal lovers from England. Hezbollah known, of course, for their all-out jihad against the forces of Satan. The ALF preferring the tactic of letting Stokes go.
Number 23,
Shining Path of Peru,
will play BOMB. Hang on, why has this ball got a fuse?
And you have to say, that's the kind of behaviour that gives terrorism a bad name.
Look back at the 90s.
In May, Britain's supermarkets were put on alert after a blackmailer phoned the police with a chilling message. He had put something nutritious in a Kellogg's Pop-Tart. As summer began, the usual spate of unexplained corn circles was overshadowed when a Mr. Keith Tremlett announced the discovery of a new and even more mysterious phenomenon.
I was walking back from the pub about 11 o'clock one night when I came across this kind of round thing. It was just there in front of me. I froze. It were one of them road circles.
You mean a mini roundabout?
Call it what you will. All I know is, it wasn't there last time I come by. And then suddenly, 3 months later, there it was. Now explain that if you can.
Well, it was put there by the council.
Oh, sure. And that explains all the other road circles that have been circuited up and down the country, does it?
Well, yes, it does. You see, if a junction suffers from congestion, then the local council install a mini roundabout to ease traffic flow.
Oh. That does explain it, doesn't it? I'd better ring the publishers about my book.
That year, as ever, roads to the West Country were blocked by a motley convoy of battered old buses full of unkempt social outcasts with beards and scruffy clothing. Yes, it was the Liberal Party conference. But the attention of the media had turned elsewhere.
Mr. Dermot, people are accusing you of creating a new kind of dog that is specifically bred for killing.
That's rubbish. Just because he's half Rottweiler.
And half great white shark.
Yeah, well, it's a breeding thing, isn't it? I mean, you get a sleeker body with a sort of slightly longer tail.
24 feet?
Yeah, well, it's only a puppy. Come on, down, Esther.
Mr. Dermot, last week your so-called shark viler got out of your garden, dived into the local swimming pool and ate the Dartford synchronised swimming team.
Yeah, well, he was just being friendly.
Look, Mr. Dermot, isn't it time you stopped breeding these killer dogs?
What more can I do? I took him to the vet and he removed his testicles.
Really?
Yeah, you should have heard the bloke scream.
As the summer of 97 progressed, the news was filled with stories of shark violers joyriding, illegal raves, shark violers joyriding at illegal raves. Eventually, they decided to run the same news bulletin every night.
Good evening. The thing that's been in the news a lot is in the news again tonight. This means that the thing that's been in the news a lot has now been in the news enough for the Prime Minister to issue a statement.
We cannot be held responsible for the thing that's been in the news a lot. Believe me, it would be in the news a lot more if Labour were in power.
The Labour Party warned the government months ago that this thing would be in the news a lot, and now it is.
Meanwhile, the public have reacted angrily.
Well, this is much worse than the last thing that was in the news a lot.
Oh, well, I blame the scapegoat.
And we've just heard that the government is rushing through the thing that's been in the news a lot, brackets being seen to do something about it, Bill. So it won't be in the news anymore. Good night.
That year, the British film industry continued to decline. The most profitable British film was Groom Falling into Blancmange, which won first prize on You've Been Framed. Even the new Bond movie was a flop, now that the end of the Cold War meant the life of a spy would never be the same.
He gets up rather late and sits on the settee. Looks out of the window and watches daytime TV. 'Cause he's a spy. A spy with not much to do. Once he was a hero, a double agent for the West. Now the Russians are on our side, so we need to take a rest. Yes, he's a spy. With time on his hands. License to fish.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
Oh, yes, Mr. Bond. Still not much spying work around, I'm afraid. Ever done any telly sales?
Behind the Iron Curtain is an underwater jet. Now his gadgets only open cat food and his curtains on net. Yes, he's the man with the golden watch. Books are overdue, but he can take them back any time. He's got an allotment. He's taken up golf. He reads pizza leaflets. Quite frankly, he's bored. He's a spy with not much to do.
stars who celebrated their birthday that year included, well, all of them actually, but in September, the showbiz world mourned the passing of one of its all-time greats, Bill the Flowerpot Man, who left behind his lifelong partner, Ben.
Mr. Simon, Ben's here to see you.
Ben, tell him I'm busy, would you?
Floobadoob!
Ben, what a great surprise!
Flooba busy?
Ben, I'm your agent. What can I do for you?
Flooba good at job.
A job? Well, to be honest, the office have dried up a bit since Bill died.
Flubba dubba quiz show?
Look, Ben, I don't know how to say this to you, but Bill was the funny one. He was the one who people came to see. Who's going to work with you?
Mr. Diamond, there's a Mr. Ernie Wise to see you.
Ah. I've got an idea.
1997.
This Sunday, we publish amazing extracts from the book that reveals the truth about the last remaining royal marriage. Prince Philip, his true story.
It began as a fairy tale romance. She was a beautiful young princess. He was some Greek bloke she bumped into at an anonymous Gory concert. For the first time, their tragic story is told by a highly placed palace insider.
One can't reveal one's identity. But one saw it all. Believe you, one.
Read how Philip found it difficult to master the intricacies of royal protocol, like not calling major trading partners slanty-eyed bastards. And how ordinary members of the public listened in to his intimate conversations by walking past the palace.
What the bloody hell is Camilla doing here?
Learn of Philip's many suicide attempts, how he made himself a protected species and then shot himself. How in a fit of depression, he threw Edward down the stairs. And how he would make himself sick by locking himself into his room and looking at his tax returns.
Prince Philip, his true story. The book that reveals everything.
Philip? Philip, who's Miss Whiplash?
That October, the government offered millions of pounds of extra benefits to deaf people. The offer was made by Virginia Bottomley on the radio. Elsewhere in the health service, waiting lists continued to grow.
Ah, Mr. Cartwright, sorry you've had to wait so long for this little operation.
That's quite all right, Doctor.
So, if you just hop up on there, I'll cut your umbilical cord.
In November, the mousetrap's record-breaking run finally ended thanks to the decision of one man. But we're not allowed to tell you who it was. And there was consternation when the Covent Garden Opera House introduced a new fundraising scheme.
Good evening and welcome to this, the first ever Covent Garden karaoke night. Spelt N-I-T-E. In tonight's performance of Carmen by Bizet, the part of Carmen will be played by Dame Kitty Takanawa, and the part of Donna Jose, her tragic lover, by Gavin from Accounts. And here comes Gavin now, taking a final swig of Hochmeister as he staggers onto the stage. And he takes his place opposite Dame Kitty.
I just called to say I love you. I just called to say how much I care.
In Act 2, Carmen responds by saying she will survive. At first she was alone, she was petrified. She thought that she could never live without him by her side. Finally, Don Jose falls off the stage, puts his foot through a kettle drum, and is helped into a minicab by his mates. But enough of this cheap populist gimmickry. Let's sit back and enjoy Pavarotti singing Nessun Dorma while bungee jumping.
By 1997, unemployment had trebled. Currency dealers were moving out of sterling and into green shield stamps. And the government owed £50 billion to a loan shark from Romford. In fact, the country was in such a mess that when the 1997 general election took place, both parties were determined to lose.
Vote Labour! Vote Labour!
That was the Conservative Party candidate for ballot.
Don't vote for me. I'm a top. I've never been here before, and I have sex with donkeys.
The Tory campaign was going well. But the opposition hit back.
And now, a party political broadcast on behalf of the Labour Party.
Hello. Remember the misery of the poll tax? We're going to bring it back. And we're going to ban mattresses. And give taxpayers money to people who breed wasps.
By the second week... By the second week, Labour had leapt behind in the polls. But then the campaign got dirty. The Sun printed forged pictures of John Smith rescuing puppies. Even John Major went on the attack.
Oh, yes. Labour say they will put up taxes. But can anyone trust them? Believe me, the day after the election, they'll halve income tax and give everyone a free mountain bike.
Meanwhile, the Liberal Democrats unveiled their brilliant election-losing strategy. They were going to run the same campaign as they always do. With 2 days to go, Labour was staring victory in the face. It was time to play their trump card.
Hello, everyone, I'm back! Let's have a rally! Let's have a rally in Sheffield.
Good evening, I'm Moira Stewart, and welcome to Lose the Election Special. On tonight's panel, for the Labour Party, we have Mr. Neil Kinnock.
Dressed as a woman.
And putting the Tories' case, Mr. Terry Christian.
Right, vote for the Tories, right? And I'll be on TV, like, every night.
I'll have to stop you there. The first result is actually coming in now.
The votes cast were as follows. Ernest James, don't vote for me, I strangle rabbits. Wilson.
Conservative Party.
No votes. Yay! Harold, I invented bank charges. Brown.
Labour Party.
No votes.
And I think there may have to be a recount.
Arga Shri Deva Prem.
Natural Law Party.
36,478 votes.
And so, at the end of 1997, Britain had its first ever natural law government, led by a mystical Eastern guru with overwhelming hypnotic powers. And a very good job he's doing, too. Next week, we'll be looking back at 1998.
A look back at the 90s was presented by Brian Perkins. It stars Steve Coogan and Kate Robbins, with the writers Mark Burton, John O'Farrell and Pete Sinclair. The producer was Caroline Ledding.